a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Is that all we need to do? Okay. Good morning. Call to order the Interim Committee on Retirement Laws. Welcome, everybody. Welcome Lisa Schaefer and Annie Melha from LRC that will help us through this morning. I know we have a lot to do. We're all busy today, so very quickly I would like to introduce the new Senate members and existing Senate members on the committee, and then we'll do roll call. Cory Brown, who is the new Assistant Majority Leader in the Senate, is a current member of the retirement laws, but he will be going off in the next year. We also have Bruce Rampelberg from Rapid City, newly elected, who will be chairman of Senate Retirement Laws, and Angie Buell, I believe, is at the end. How you doing, Angie? And Representative Rounds, if you'd like to introduce the House.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. One senator you did miss, if I may. He's a representative today. Why don't you introduce him?
Larry Tiedemann is joining the other House. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tim.
The House is going to miss you, Representative Tiedemann. And thank you, Senator Nelson. I think the House Retirement Laws Committee is in pretty good shape. We've got Representative Steele coming back next year, so he'll be here. We're going to lose Representative Noel Hamill. But we do gain with Representative Hal Witt coming back. He's been in the House for a number of years. I think he knows this committee without ever sitting on it. He knows it pretty well. We do have Representative Feinstein back, Representative Kirschman back. Am I missing?
Period.
Oh, the gentleman replacing me, he just sat up, Representative Tad Perry from District 24. It will be a new member of the committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Rounds. Call the roll, please.
Representative Feinstein?
Here.
Representative Hamill?
Here.
Representative Kirschman?
Here.
Representative Steele?
Here.
Senator Abdallah? Senator Brown?
Here.
Senator Jurstead? Senator Miles? Representative Rounds?
Here.
Senator Nelson?
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. Appreciate you all coming in for this meeting. We meet infrequently during session, but it's very important that the retirement system get their information to us so we can ponder over it and try to get as much done as quickly as possible. Last year was kind of a dicey session for retirement laws, but we managed to get everything done. We have some possible legislation as well this year. And with that, I will welcome Mr. Hubbard and Mr. Wiley, but since he tends to talk less when he has the gavel, I will turn the rest of the meeting over to my vice chair, Representative Rounds.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. Such kind words. Next item of business is the funded status by Rob Wiley, SDRS. And Mr. Wiley, if you'd like to proceed.
Have I got this on now? Yes. Before I do that, first let me introduce here at this meeting with me at the table is Wade Hubbard, the general counsel for SDRS. Wade and I handle the legislative work for SDRS and lobbying, so you'll see us two around the Capitol occasionally. Also with me today is Damian Prunty, our director of operations. Damian comes along with us today so that we make sure we keep ourselves in line when we visit with you. And then also Jim Hansen, our board member for the Board of Trustees, who represents retirees on the South Dakota Retirement System Board of Trustees.
Is there anybody else behind you over there?
No.
With that, let me actually start with this little one-pager and just take just a second to go through that. I'm doing this mostly for those of you who are new at the committee right now, and this is a little fact sheet that I use in the field when I'm traveling a lot, and just let me run through a couple things on there. First and foremost, SDRS is a cost-sharing multi-employer plan. The design of the plan is really to do a retirement system for public employees that is as efficient and effective as it can be by managing all of the groups together. Virtually every public employee in the state of South Dakota is together in this plan, together to provide the benefits of retirement, disability, and survivor to each of those public employees. And that's been our design, our plan, since 1974. The plan itself has traditionally been very successful financially. We continue to knock on wood on that, but through what I think is probably well recognized as very conservative practices by the Board of Trustees, by this committee, and the legislature and the executive branch, we've ran this plan in such a way that it is providing a good benefit, a secure benefit, but also not asking for contributions beyond what is statutorily defined in law and how we establish this plan. It's worked out well. The marketplace was difficult for us, just like it was for everyone else who has investments. During the last year, Senator Nelson made recognize that it was a more difficult session. We had to stop back and say, after 11 straight times when we did benefit improvements, we had to roll one back. And so that was our first time we had to deal with that. And you're right, it was quite a challenge and will continue to be a challenge because we're now finding ourselves wrestling with that issue in court. We'll talk about that a little bit more at the end. As far as the benefits are concerned, SDRS is a fairly standard pension plan by what we think of plans, but has a number of features that are more like features that you would have in a defined contribution plan. The plan provides for regular retirement. It provides for retirees to have an automatic COLA. We guarantee the payouts of all of the contributions that you have made and a member has made and their employer has made. The benefits are vested and then also indexed if you terminate before you retire. There are family benefits that provide benefits for survivors and also disability benefits. There are two voluntary plans that we oversee, and with the change last year, we now have an additional plan that we monitor on behalf of the state, and that is the South Dakota Cement Plant Retirement Plan has now come under our umbrella, not in the same features as a regular SDRS, but more as an oversight of what's going on there. Just down at the bottom of this one page, I would make a couple notes to you. The plan has turned out to be more than we ever anticipated it to be when I joined this plan 29 years ago or thereabouts. We were $300 million in assets. We now pay out every year more than $300 million in benefits. It's an amazing story that over this time frame we've been able to grow this plan the way it has grown and provide the support that it provides. Every community that you represent in your district receives benefits from this plan. The great thing about it is that it permits people to stay in the home, in the community that they worked in many cases. It supports small towns just as well as big towns. I did represent to you in the bottom, though, the three largest counties that participate in SDRS, Minnehaha, Pennington, and Hughes County, each of those having more than $20 million in annual revenues from SDRS in the form of benefits, Sioux Falls and Minnehaha County in the form of $45 million, Rapid City about $40 million, and in each of the cases, a very large portion of the population in some counties have a membership to SDRS. It has been a very all-inclusive design and has really meant that it impacts the state as a whole. Have I left you with questions about this little piece before I move on to some of the funding?
Any questions of Mr. Wiley? Seeing none, proceed.
Again, particularly for those of you that are new on the committee, I will certainly volunteer to come to your coffee shop or wherever we can get together to visit and try and give you more background on the plan going into the session and just help you be better prepared for the start of the new year. Let me turn to the document that looks like this. And Dean, does Representative Boland have a copy? The first page is just pretty much the basis for everything that we do. We work hard to maintain a high-funded status. We've got it designed to establish reserves before we ever consider increasing benefits. We have a program for what are the criteria for increasing benefits, and we have a criteria for when we would consider corrective action to maybe decrease benefits. All of those have been with us for a long time. They've served us very well, where we don't commit dollars too early. And in the case of the final item on the list here, it's given us the thresholds and criteria for when we need to consider adjustments. If you look at page two, as I had mentioned to you, SDRS has traditionally been very well funded. If you go to the very far right-hand side, in the survey averages our other fellow public pension plans around the country are running funded ratios of probably around 71% on an actuarial basis and 65 on a market basis. The methodology used in pension plans provides for two measures, one that smooths the ups and downs of the asset growth or change in the assets so that we don't have great volatility based only on market value changes. And the other, of course, is those market value changes, where we stand today. And so we give you both those numbers. SDRS, as traditionally the case, has exceeded those of the group quite substantially. We do have, as of the end of this calendar year, fiscal year, 96% funding on an actuarial and 88% funding on a market basis. Markets since the end of the fiscal year have improved. We've had our returns for this fiscal year to date have been approximately 11.4%, but we all know that may or may not stay. We can't guarantee anything there. If we were to just hold that number, we would be in the, if you look at the next page, we would be in the 90 to 92% funded ratio. Each of these things are designed to give us a measure of how we stand financially. We want that number to be 100%. Our goal is actually 95% or better. And prior to the downturns in the market in 2009, we had 22 years in a row of 100% or better, with one exception where we dipped to 99% in 2003. So it has been a measure it's been a goal that has been achievable for us, and we're looking forward to getting back to that place. If I can move you on to page five, again, measures of how we are doing, and I would just focus on the very bottom line of page five, and that's our annual required contribution. If you're in actuarial balance, which we are, if you continue to make 100% of the required contributions, you will always remain well funded. You always have the ability to pay your benefits. You'll always be in a situation that you are able to do the things with the plan that you need to do without having any additional contributions, without having changed any assumptions, or without having to correct any benefits. Let me give you some quick conclusions, and then we can move on to the legislation. This experience in 2010 was fabulous. Investment performance was 18.7%. It brought us back to that 88% funded level. Again, a very positive number, and one that is within the actuarial balance. That means that we, within our own operations, will just whittle away right up to that 100% funding over time. We compare very favorably to others still, but at the same time, we're being very watchful of the long-term benefits and the fiscal sustainability of this plan. That is our responsibility as a board of trustees and staff to make sure this plan runs within the framework that has been successful all these years. One of the things that is different about SDRS, again, from other public plans, is that a long time ago, when this plan was established 35 years ago, the commitments made by the Board of Trustees were that we were going to run this plan within the framework of the dollars that we had available to make this plan work. We effectively said, we won't come back to you and ask for more money. And at the same time, we hope that that is the case in the case of the legislature, that will hold the same thing, is that we'll hold the line on the contributions for the members and not have that be a volatile swing that moves up and down. The system has worked exceedingly well under that measure. Most other plans vary their contribution rates almost every year or every few years. And it adds to the great volatility that some other plans have that we've avoided to this time. We're going to continue to monitor this performance, and we'll be doing some special studies starting immediately here to make sure things are working the way they should and that the benefit structure is the way it needs to be. I will just make one comment before we go on to the legislative items. I did say earlier that we took over the monitoring of the South Dakota Cement Plant retirement plan this year. We're just getting done with our first evaluation since we've started working with that plan. The plan, you remember, was established for the employees of the cement plant. The cement plant was sold in 2001. There are no new contributions going into the plan, and everything is just in the form of payouts right now. As you would expect, that plan also had some tough times with the marketplace downfall in 2009. There are some shortfalls there. We're trying to identify those. We're not coming back to you today and this legislative session with any considerations on this plan, but I want to just make you aware that we are working on that. The plan is, you know, by most standards, quite well funded, but it's not fully funded here also, and so we need to be very watchful of that one also. With that, unless you have some questions for me, I would suggest we move on to the legislation.
Any questions from the committee? Representative Feinstein.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Wiley, I'm a little bit interested in this cement plant. If there are problems, do we as a state have to help fund it, or is that going to just come from internally? I mean, what happens there?
That plan has been slightly underfunded for actually several years here, and then the marketplace aggravated it even more. As of right now, the design of that plan is that there is the potential in the future of a need for additional contributions, and for all practical purposes, the state is probably the one that's in that position. There are no other funds in that are coming to the plan. During the last few months here, the final properties that were originally owned by the Cement Plant Commission have been sold. The Cement Plant Commission will sunset as of June 30th of 2011, and in essence, the liabilities that remain from that are actually state liabilities.
Representative Feinstein, do you have a follow-up?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. When this came to us, were we told that we may have to fund it from the general fund? Or from our dollars, or
you're getting back before my time. As far as when things were originally established in this was back in 2001, and I don't know all the details of what was provided to the legislature at the time of that sale. But this is all based on the original sale that established that plan and everything that transpired with the cement plant.
Representative Feinstein.
So in other words, if we hadn't taken our action last year, it wouldn't have mattered. We still would have been obligated.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you.
Senator Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wiley, approximately how many members are receiving benefits from this cement plant?
From the cement plant right now, and I'm back here. I was thinking I had it on here. There's actually 100. There's 225 that are receiving benefits. There are 71 that are currently still working for the new employer, but they're working for the new employer still accrues them service credits towards their benefits. It doesn't grow their salary. It doesn't grow their contributions or anything like that, but they get credit for their rule of 85 for the additional year's work. They also have approximately 60 people who are not working any longer for the new employer, but have a deferred vested benefit that will be payable when they turn 55. And so the liabilities of the plan are approximately $55 million. The assets of the plan right now are approximately $43 million. We have a net payout of about $500,000 a year in the form of benefits and expenses.
Senator Brown, do you have a follow-up? Further questions of the committee?
Just the one thing that I should tell you is page 11 is the page you want to see, and the reason why we give you this heads up. If things transpire as we expect them to, they'll be 55% funded in 2020. That's ultimately the concern that any of us should have in looking at it, is that we're just going to whittle this thing down, and at some point we're going to have to decide what to do as far as how to fund it or how to deal with it going forward.
Further questions? Seeing none, Mr. Wiley, if you'd like to move on to your potential SDRS legislation.
I would suggest that I invite Mr. Hubbard to handle that part of the, that part of the program and move right forward.
Thank you. Good morning. For one fleeting moment, knowing that Senator Nelson and I have spent some time around each other, I thought when he said he's quieter if I hand the gavel off, I thought I was going to get it. But I'm going to talk as briefly as I can, understanding that there's some background and explanation that goes along with, in particular, the main bill this year. I'm going to talk about the potential legislation. The reason I say potential, this is especially for you new folks, is that the SDRS Board of Trustees generally sends a legislative package to the legislature just like any other agency would. Our Board of Trustees is meeting the day after tomorrow and will actually review all of this legislation and decide what to send forward to you folks. So that's why it's called potential legislation at this time, because our board hasn't even given a thumbs up or a thumbs down on it yet. Our principal legislation this year is going to involve veterans' benefits. As all of you know, except maybe the newer folks, SDRS is a qualified retirement system. That's qualified under federal law, specifically Internal Revenue Service law. In the private sector, that provides a significant benefit to an employer and some benefit to employees. In the public sector, the employers don't, such as the state, don't gain or don't receive a lot from this, but it is of great benefit to the employees. That's why it's so important that we maintain the qualified status of the plan under IRS law. Some of the federal laws that we have to follow involve veterans' status with retirement plans. In particular, one that's been around since 1994 is USERRA. I'm on generally on page 2 right now. USERRA stands for Uniformed Services Employment and Reemployment Rights Act. Basically, USERRA says that if an individual is called into active duty, these days it's in the Guard or Reserves, that this would happen, that the person doesn't lose anything from having gone into the service of their country. Generally, it's known as the escalator principle. If this individual steps off their normal employment escalator, if you will, to go on to active duty, the person does not get back on the escalator where they stepped off. They get back on the step that they were on when they went into active duty. This is especially important a lot of times in the private sector because, particularly if there are contracts involved or especially union contracts or whatnot, there will be automatic seniority, automatic pay jump, and that kind of thing. And this individual won't have lost anything by being in the service. This also applies to public sector plans, although not so much. And it's a lot more difficult because, generally speaking, in our area, when the when Congress passes new legislation, it's almost always aimed at the private sector. And then the public sector has to try to follow along and fit in. There is one provision within USERRA that is important to the public sector because public sector plans generally have employee contributions as well as employer contributions. While USERRA wants to make this veteran whole, USERRA does not want to provide a windfall. Consequently, when it's a public sector plan and there are public employee contributions that must be made, the individual will be covered for the time they were gone as far as retirement benefits if, in fact, the individual makes the contributions that he or she would have made had they not gone in the service. That's a little bit different than the private sector. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that later on today. There's a newer piece of legislation on the federal scene, just a few years old, called the HART Act. And that has come out of the various engagements we've been in over the last 2 years, particularly Iraq and Afghanistan. HART, by the way, stands for Heroes Earning Assistance and Relief Tax Act. I found HART to be interesting when it was first passed because, as I mentioned before, USERRA said we're going to cover these folks, make sure that they at least break even, but it didn't provide for any windfalls. HART is a little bit different. Of the various provisions of the HART Act, the ones that apply to us involve death and disability of folks that are in the service. Specifically, since we are a qualified plan, we must follow the HART Act, and the HART Act mandates that if one of our members is on leave of absence for military duty and that individual dies, the individual must be treated as though he or she came back off active duty, rejoined the system the day before their death. In other words, they come back as an active member and are covered by system death benefits. Here's what I found interesting when I first read this, is that no one is expected to make the contributions that this individual did not pay. The employer and the system are generally on the hook for this. There's also a disability provision in the HART Act, although it is voluntary. It operates the same way. It says if one of these individuals is called active duty and they are disabled while on active duty, they should be regarded as having come off of active duty and rejoined their retirement plan along with its disability benefits the day before the disabling injury or perhaps illness, but probably injury. Again, that's voluntary, but we're looking at that also as part of SDRS. Finally, there's another provision in the HART Act that applies to at least some of our members. As most of you, but probably not all of you know, we have a voluntary defined contribution retirement plan available to our members. It's called the Section 457 plan because that's the section of the IRS code from where it comes. You know it is a supplemental retirement plan. It is strictly voluntary. Members can contribute to it. Probably a better explanation is that it's Section 457 plans are generally called 401ks for public employees. When an individual is an active employee and participating, even if they're not actively making contributions, they cannot get their money out except under special circumstances, at least until they terminate. While they're still active, they can get the money out for unforeseeable emergencies. There are provisions for small accounts to be dispersed while the individual is active. And now, under the HART Act, folks that are called to active duty, because of the financial hardships that can be involved with that, can take money out of the supplemental retirement plan. And, of course, our legislation will have this suggestion to the board and probably on to you folks in the legislature. Turning to page 3, we get a little bit more specific. The legislation that the staff is suggesting to the board the day after tomorrow has three different scenarios. Number one references SDCL 3-12-86. That statute has been on the SDRS books since 1974 when SDRS started. It is very generous. In fact, it is more generous than USURA. The reason is that if one of our members goes on active duty and then comes back, returns to an SDRS employer, it doesn't even have to be the same employer that the individual left, just one of our 470-some employers, within 1 year of being relieved from active duty and then works for 1 year, SDRS will pick up the contributions, both employer contributions and employee contributions. In other words, 3-12-86 is better than USURA because it does not expect the individual to make the employee contributions. It's really a great deal. Consequently, having always been better than USURA, SDRS didn't really have any problems complying with USURA until recently. And we'll touch on that in a second. Anyway, the first scenario in this legislation that we're proposing to the board is that we maintain 3-12-86 working in the same way that it has over the years. Going on to page 4, I've mentioned before the USURA says that an individual that's gone on active duty can capture credited retirement service for that period that the individual was gone if they make their contributions, and then in turn USURA says that the employer should make the employer contributions. We have recently had one individual come back and to his old job. I'm not going to mention any names because of confidentiality, but he returned to his old job, but he'd been gone for over 4 years. And his job wasn't the kind where there are 30 people on the payroll, so a 31st doesn't make any difference. It was a different kind of job. His employer naturally had not held the job open for him for all that period of time. He was back right away, but made it maybe a month before he terminated his employment. So he came to us and said, I want to make the contributions under USURA. Fine with us. It's federal law and it's mandatory, but we had no provisions for this. We've worked it out. Just yesterday, we received his check. His employer is sending a check. He is getting his credited service, and away we go. But again, we don't have any legislative authority for that. With this legislation, we will. If, in fact, the board recommends it to you folks, and then you folks adopt it. Finally, scenario 3, I've already touched on. Again, that's the HART Act. We need to put the first provision in place because it's mandated. If we want to remain a qualified system, we have to have the death benefit provision. The staff is suggesting to the board and hopefully on to you folks that the disability provisions be put in SDRS law also. And finally, of course, the provisions for withdrawals from the supplemental retirement plan, even though the person is still not terminated from that plan. I've covered a lot of ground and maybe too much background, taking too much time. I apologize if I have. Are there any questions on the veterans legislation at this point?
Questions of the committee?
We should let you know that the actuary has estimated the cost at between $5 and $10 million for this benefit.
Seeing no questions, Mr. Hubbard, if you want to continue. Do you have one more to do, child benefits?
Yes. Let's proceed on to child benefits on page 6. Child benefits aren't nearly as dramatic as the Veterans Benefits Bill this year. Pretty much just cleanup in legislation. Number one, we have a disability statute, 3-12-99.1, that establishes disability benefits, which are 50% of the member's final average salary for the member, plus an additional 10% for each child that the member has. It is somewhat frequent that a disabled member contacts us and says, I just had another child. Do the benefits increase? Well, logically they do, but we don't have any provision for that in our law. This would add that provision. Again, this is pretty logical, but the law just doesn't say anything about that. Number two, the family benefits. In other words, when a member has passed away, the member's surviving spouse and children receive benefits. And again, there's a 10% per child. If there is no surviving spouse, then it's 20% per child, paid to a custodian or a conservator. Obviously, as each child gets old enough that they're no longer considered a child, the benefits should stop. But again, the law doesn't specify that. No one's ever questioned that, by the way. But you folks who have worked with me before know how anal I can be about these kind of things and try to always plug holes in the law before they even appear. That's all this would do, is clarify that the benefit stops when the child is no longer a child. Finally, there's a third provision, and this does deal with when a child is a child or not. Up until 2008, a child was deemed to be an adult at age 18, and the benefits for a child stopped. Sometimes that's pretty early. I myself had a stepdaughter who was turned 18 in about October of her senior year of high school, which all of you that have been there know is about the most expensive possible year that a child can have. And yet we were cutting them off. So several years ago, or in 2008, the board suggested, and the legislature said, yeah, let's make a child 19. No problem. It's working beautifully. Except that the age of majority is 18. So pretty soon, sure enough, kids started turning 18. And particularly if we were paying benefits to a conservator or a custodian because there wasn't a surviving parent, now we're paying benefits to a conservator or a custodian on behalf of an adult. This would just say that it would codify what the system has actually been doing, and that is when a child turns 18, we start giving the benefit to the child as an adult until the individual is 19, and then the benefit stops. Are there any questions on the child package?
Representative Feinstein.
Mr. Chair. You know, I understand the situation where a child is 18, still in high school. Was there any thought given to when it ends, like maybe at graduation or a month after graduation? Only thing, because it does cover that time period.
Representative Feinstein, the staff had discussed that somewhat, but I don't know what the board is going to say. If they want to put in a provision like that, I find some difficulty in it, because, again, now you're dealing with an adult. I understand your concern. The adult may still be at home. but it's really kind of, but in particular, where we have benefits being paid to a custodian or conservator because there's no parent. Now you're dealing with someone that may, in fact, even have left the home.
Representative Feinstein, do you have a follow-up?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
The other thing with that, too, is that for us to maintain the ability to recognize when a student finishes high school is pretty difficult. Every school a different date, some kids into the summer. We found that the right answer was really just to go with their age and try not to, try and get it right for outside of high school, but not so far that we would have the administrative headaches of trying to figure out when everybody graduated.
But you're already creating a deal when he turns 18. I mean, I was thinking more of the second provision there, not the third. I don't mind the idea of paying him directly. I think that's a valid thing, but it's when they graduate tonight, why through the age of 19? And you've explained it. I might be pretty easy to set a July 1st date and whatever, but anyway, just a thought.
Do you have a follow-up on that comment? Okay. Go ahead and proceed.
The last bill is just a Board of Trustee appointment bill that cleans up that appointment. We have some situations where, due to the way the law is written, an appointed member of the Board of Trustees has to run for re-election effectively 2 years in a row. We're just asking that we be able to let them serve out the term instead of having an interim election. It saves the system quite a bit of money in some cases that we wouldn't have to mail every year effectively for a couple of years in a row for some of our large groups, and we'd be able to maintain that appointed person through the end of that term. Each has a four-year term, and so they'd be limited at the end of the four-year term, but try not to have an interim election just to add. We just have a hard time keeping some of our trustees on board, and as far as turnover is concerned, and so we're hoping this can help some turnover and save some costs.
Questions on that third piece? Before we proceed, are there any questions on the package that we've seen, the three potential? I do know when you get into session, if these bills come to be, they will be recommended in 2 days, Thursday. Is that correct?
Yes.
If you want to look and see at pre-filed bills that come in, I don't know if they're going to be House or Senate bills this year.
This is the year for the House side.
There'll be House bills. They'll start on the House side, so Representative Steele as the chair would then be the one to sign off and have those pre-filed. Mr. Wiley, Mr. Hubbard are available if you have specific information on the legislation, if these are pre-filed, that you want them to address at the committee meeting, or if you have questions right now on information they want to bring, go ahead and ask them. They will be glad to get that information to you should these bills be pre-filed and brought out. Today is not the day to debate the bills. Right now we want to get information for those new members. A lot is being thrown at you right now. These are probably the simpler package we've seen in a number of years, but it's still quite complicated. Mr. Wiley, Mr. Hubbard, do you have additional comments to make?
Really, that's all that we need to cover today. I will be happy to sit down with any of you privately on any of these issues, particularly if any of you would like to ask about any of the discussions going on in our legal issues. I would be happy to sit down with you privately instead of trying to discuss such things on the public venue here. I wanted to take the opportunity to thank the chairs. It has been great working with both of you. Senate Representative Rounds, what a thank you for all your support over the years. Senator Nelson, Representative Hamill, thank you for participating in all this over the years that we've worked together. And I'm looking, and Senator Brown, too, thank you. I'm looking forward to working with all of those that are on the 2011 committees. And as I say, I will make every effort to get together with you prior to session to go over anything I can go over that would help you be better prepared for this. We do not believe this is as big of a package as we've had sometimes lately, so maybe it'll be a little easier going, but you just never know exactly how things will transpire here. We look forward to a great session and working with all of you again.
Thank you, Mr. Wiley. Thank you, Mr. Hubbard. Are there any comments or questions of the committee of Mr. Hubbard, Mr. Wiley? Any questions? Any comments? Representative Steele.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You were going to comment on the lawsuit, or did you want to comment on that? Did we want to get into that at all?
Let me just tell you that it is very, very early in the process, and at this point in time, the only thing that has happened is connections between the two groups, and we will be providing what will be background information to the plaintiff's attorneys in the next couple of weeks. It will last a long time.
If I may follow up on that, for those that may not be aware, there was some legislation we passed this year in which there was a lawsuit filed. Type in Google and read about it. It's pretty exciting stuff. Any further comments or questions from the committee for Mr. Hubbard, Mr. Wiley? Seeing none. Before I turn it over, I'd like to. It's been a pleasure the past 8 years working with these two gentlemen here. During my 8 years, I think we hired only the second executive administrator ever over the past 35 years to run the retirement system. And during that time, we've given out additional benefits, I do believe in 07, or was it 08, one of those years, in which we had 121%, I think, we're at the market value. Then we had to turn around this year and change that around with what some people perceive as cuts, which has now led to the lawsuit. But I think we've seen it all over the past 8 years.
Over that time frame, just to give you perspective, over your tenure on the committee, Representative Rounds, we've paid out over $2 billion in benefits to the citizens of the state of South Dakota.
And I was going to just make that comment to the members of the committee. This one isn't one of the glorified committees that are out there in the legislature, but when you read that little handout that Mr. Wiley handed out and look at the membership, we have this retirement system directly affects 73,000 people in the state. I think this one, with that much effect, with the dollars paid out on an annual benefit, $335 million. In my district alone, $24 million, and we're not one of the bigger districts in the state. We do have a lot of state employees, but I've kind of carried this near and dear to my heart because although our state employees haven't gotten the pay raises over the past few years, our benefit system is set up to help a little bit on that end, and I think we've got one of the better retirement systems in the country, if not the best. A lot of them across the country look at this one with envy. The market value, if other systems were looking at 90% market value, they'd be doing backflips and somersaults and partying. We look at that as being down, and I've seen it climb back up here the past 12 to 16 months. So the retirement system's in good hands. I'm going to turn this over to some very good people when I finally step aside, and I know Senator Nelson has the same feelings. I'm going to turn it over to Senator Nelson for any comments.
Motion to adjourn is in order.
So moved. Oh, I can't be here. So moved.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, not nay. Motion carried. Thank you.